Please be seated. Good afternoon. Well, before I call the case for this afternoon, I wanted to let you all know that although Justice Michael Gableman is not sitting here on the bench with us, he is watching by Wisconsin Eye. He was a little bit under the weather this morning. He did participate in pre-conference before the morning's cases, and he will participate in the decisional conference again by phone when we get done. So I just wanted to call that to your attention. The third case today, State versus Arbery. Counsel, are you ready to proceed? Please do.
Thank you, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Ellen Cron, and I represent the defendant appellant, Diamond Arbery. The primary issue in this case is whether expungement eligibility can be a new factor for sentence modification. Allowing a court who overlooked expungement to have the opportunity to consider using this important tool in its sentencing toolkit is consistent with the legislative purpose of the expungement statute and fits well within the longstanding new factor test.
Counsel, you know, we have a whole lot of law that goes to new factors, but don't we consider things at post-conviction motions that aren't new factors?
Sure, there's more than one way to bring a post-conviction motion.
Okay.
A new factor is one of them.
Okay, and I was just wondering, I mean, why you limit your argument to new factors rather than simply saying this is an appropriate matter to bring in a post-conviction motion and then give a variety of other reasons.
I think I could have brought the motion as a ineffective assistance of counsel motion as well.
Okay.
But I don't think that it had to be brought that way,
mm-hmm.
And I think the new factor is the appropriate vehicle in this case.
Okay.
I think it's the most efficient way to bring this type of claim, and it's the remedy that was suggested by the state in Matasik.
Okay, thank you.
In addition, if Ms. Arbery and others can have expungement considered as a new factor when it was overlooked at the original sentencing hearing, this is likely to have a small impact on the judicial system, but could have a big impact on the life of an individual defendant. As it is,
I believe in the public policy advanced by the legislature, encouraging expungement for juveniles. Having said that, you indicate that it would have a minimum impact on the judicial system. And let me just challenge you, and by that I mean I want you to convince me of your position. I think that requiring, as I believe the words of the statute do, we stated that in the TASIC, that the motion be brought at the time of sentencing limits its availability, as it did here, and that allowing it to be brought post-sentencing would and could likely open up a vast array of requests, which would be more than a de minimis impact on the criminal court. Can you respond to that, please?
I can't. I don't think it will have a huge impact on the judicial system. One, because there's already a limited class of defendants who are even eligible for expungement under the statute. Two, that group is then limited down by the people who have had expungement addressed at the sentencing hearing. They can't come back and say this is a new factor because it wasn't considered, because they had it considered. And then three, the new factor here is that Ms. Arbery met the statutory eligibility requirements for expungement, and she can only bring that type of motion once. Once she brings that, she can't come back again and say, and if it's denied, keep considering me for it, because then her new factor would be her rehabilitation, which courts have already said is not a new factor. In addition,
counsel, could we explore the new factor just a little bit? I'm not entirely certain I understand what the new fact is. all of the underlying facts that would or would not grant her eligibility for expunction were known at the time of sentencing, correct?
Correct.
And the statute by which one could be eligible for expunction, that was known at the time of sentencing, right?
Correct.
Okay, so what's the new fact?
The new fact is that that statute actually applied to Ms. Arbery and that she was then eligible.
How is that a fact? How is that a fact as opposed to a piece of reasoning?
Well, courts have found new factors before where some reasoning is required, where it was more than just simply Ms. Arbery's age.
I like to think that everything our judges do involve reasoning. So the cases to which you pointed in your brief is a question of reasoning about facts that were not known. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's not just a lack of reasoning. It's a question of a lack of the knowledge of fact. So what is it that was not known at the time of sentencing?
That Ms. Arbery was, in fact, eligible for expungement.
But that involves the application of the statute to a set of facts, doesn't it?
Yes.
And all the facts to which that statute would be applied were already known.
Yes. And returning to your question, Judge Bradley, the other thing that I think makes this not extremely impactful on the judicial system is that new factor motions are among the simplest motions for circuit court judges to hear. If the circuit court in this case had said that it did, in fact, silently consider expungement, it could have denied the motion without a hearing in writing by simply saying, this is not a new factor, I did consider it. So it's not a huge burden on the court system to hear these motions if they are brought by the limited class of individuals who would be able to bring them. In addition, there is legislation pending in the legislature now that would change the expungement process to a petition process. So it's also possible that if one of those bills passes in the future, it's going to be only a small group of people between the Matasik decision and this decision that would have had this overlooked and not be able to bring the issue in a petition pursuant to the new legislation.
If the new if the legislation that you reference becomes the law, and I note that last week, November 7th, the Senate passed Senate Bill 53, what, if any, import does that have on this case, number one? And number two, should that be a reason for us to say, well, it doesn't cover hardly any people in terms of this case, and so why don't we just improvidently grant this case?
Well, I believe that there are two bills circulating, and one would be retroactive and the other would not. And I believe the one that is not retroactive is the one that passed, although it's still subject to amendment. So if the non-retroactive bill became law, then Ms. Arbery still wouldn't be able to use the petition process because the new law wouldn't apply to her, and so she would still need this court to allow her to raise this as a new factor and remand to the circuit court for a discretionary decision.
Your response was very illuminating. Thank you for that. The second part of the question then was, well, if it's going to affect just a very, very few people, why do we use our resources to decide a case that affects only a very few people? So can you respond to that, please?
I think because even though it might only affect very few people, this court has talked about the importance of expungement for a young offender to reenter society without the burden of the criminal conviction. And so although it might only be a few people, it could be very important to those individuals.
Counselor, how does your argument fit with the statement by the judge that said, well, no one asked me about it, but if they had, I would not have granted it?
The judge did attempt to make a discretionary ruling saying that he would not have granted it,
right,
but we're arguing that that wasn't a proper exercise of discretion. I think if the court would have given a proper exercise of discretion and whether or not the case was new, if he said no and there was no challenge to the exercise of discretion, that would have been the end of the case and we wouldn't be here.
Why was it not a proper exercise of discretion?
It wasn't a proper exercise of discretion because the court said things like, convictions have consequences and they are of public record so that the public can protect themselves. The public has a right to know who commits what crimes so that they can make decisions to decide how best to interact with an individual for their own mutual decisions of mutual benefit. And then he mentions that there are laws to prevent discrimination for convictions. This is simply a discussion of expungement. It doesn't discuss any facts relevant to Ms. Arbery's case, and the exercise of discretion requires a court to apply the facts of the case to the legal standard.
Did he not reference that she had a 2013 and a 2014 conviction also, in addition to the 2015 one?
No, this is the extent of the judge's ruling on that issue.
And that's the thrust of your argument, that it's not individual to this. Those comments don't go to an exercise of discretion vis-a-vis this individual defendant.
Right. It's not individual to her, and because of that, it could be stated in response to any request for expungement, and because of that, it could be interpreted as a policy of this court simply doesn't grant expungement, and courts are not allowed to have preconceived policies that are not open to mitigating factors.
Perhaps because of that, you didn't do, continuing your litany, perhaps because of that, you didn't do ineffective assistance of counsel because you may have had difficulty proving prejudice. Perhaps.
That's part of it, but I do think that any time a fact is overlooked and alleged to be a new factor, it's something that was in existence at the time, and it could always be said that trial counsel should have found out about that fact that was in existence. Mm-hmm. But this court hasn't required those claims to be brought as ineffective assistance of counsel claims. For instance, in State v. Armstrong, a Court of Appeals case, the Court of Appeals found it to be a new factor that the sentence credit was wrong, and in fact, he's due a different amount of sentence credit. That could have been raised as ineffective assistance because the trial attorney didn't get the sentence credit calculation right. And in Ralph, the new factor was that the defendant's accomplice had a prior record. And at the sentencing hearing, they were arguing about how the accomplice's sentence affected Ralph's sentence. And so it could have been argued there. The defense attorney should have been ready with that information because it would have changed the case. But this court has still held that we do have a new factor claim based on information that was in existence at the time and was overlooked, and there's no requirement that it be brought as ineffective assistance of counsel. The information that Ms. Arbery was eligible for expungement is also highly relevant to her sentence. At the time of sentencing, the judge discussed that he wanted to give her the tools and abilities for long-term success and outcomes. He discussed her young age and impulsivity and said that he hoped the sentence would allow her to engage in an assessment of her future and goals. And so those things are all relevant to the purpose of the expungement statute, which is to recognize that those who are young and impulsive can go forward and be productive members of society and have long-term success and outcomes and have an incentive to assess their future and goals. Allowing Ms. Arbery to raise this as a new factor motion for sentence modification is also not in conflict with this court's ruling in State v. Matasik. Ms. Arbery, there the issue was whether, as a matter of course, decisions for expungement need to be made at the time of sentencing, or whether, as a matter of course, they can be delayed until the end of the sentence when the defendant can come back and say, I've completed my sentence, look how I've done. And Ms. Arbery is not asking to delay the decision here. Rather, she's saying, this wasn't considered at my initial sentencing hearing. Please give me one opportunity to have it considered.
Counsel, should we consider the circuit court's statements at sentencing in conjunction with his statements in the post-conviction motion with respect to the request for expunction?
No, I don't think so. I think that the statements that he made at sentencing are relevant and show why expungement was highly relevant to her sentence. And there are certainly facts that the circuit court discussed that weigh both for and against Ms. Arbery being granted expungement. But I think if this...
So the court has to consider two things consider granting expunction, right? Benefit to the defendant and potential harm to society, right?
Correct.
You've got to do both of those.
Yes.
And at sentencing, the circuit court said that her risk of reoffending was sky high.
Yes.
So shouldn't that be factored into his comments at the post-conviction motion when he discussed expunction?
I don't think that this court can take the judge's statements and apply them to the standard without doing its own exercise of discretion applying the facts to the standard. I think there are other areas of law where we can look and see what the judge would have done, and certainly that's going to be a factor that would weigh against Ms. Arbery if the case is remanded. But I don't think that this court can say what the circuit court would have done, based on the record, without engaging in its own exercise of discretion. And exercises of discretion are reviewed under a deferential standard, and the remedy for a new factor is not to have the appellate court exercise its discretion, but to remand.
You ask us to exercise our superintending authority to require circuit courts to address expungement on the record for all eligible defendants. That, of course, is a very rare indeed event when we exercise our superintending authority. Not that we haven't, but it is rare. Why should that exercise that is rarely done, that is extending superintending authority to a new area, be done in this case?
Well, first, I don't think it needs to be done in this case if the court concludes that Ms. Arbery can raise this issue as a new factor. So that is our secondary position. Mm-hmm. But I think that it is consistent with the court's superintending authority, which is done to promote the efficient and effective operation of the state's court system. And here, the purpose of the expungement statute is to give youthful offenders a break, but it's also been noted in Hemp that the legislature has only expanded this opportunity, so they want more people, not less, to be able to be eligible and be considered for this. And making sure that it's considered on the record at sentencing helps promote that by making sure that everyone is considered who's eligible. And it also is more efficient because courts at the time of sentencing do have to have that information of age, prior convictions, and maximum penalty. So it makes a statute that's already in existence more efficient and just talks about how that should be exercised in practice. Moving back to the issue of whether this is in conflict with Matasik, I would also point out that the state's brief in Matasik argued that simply because a circuit court must make the decision about expunction at the time of sentencing does not eliminate a defendant's right to challenge his sentence, including the expunction decision. And this is not just a gotcha argument, but the state made a good point. There aren't other things. More simply put, everything that needs to be done at sentencing needs to be done at sentencing. And when something is missed, we don't say we can never address that again. It's raised in a post-conviction motion. And so Ms. Arbery's argument also doesn't add words to the statute, which the state argued. The state argued that the expungement statute would have to read, this may be raised at the time of sentencing or on post-conviction motion. And if we look to other things that are done at sentencing, that's not the case that language appears. For example, in the statute that requires courts to consider the earned release program, 973.013G, the language says when imposing a bifurcated sentence. And under the state's argument, that statute would have to read when imposing a bifurcated sentence or considering a post-conviction motion. The same goes with 973.049, sentencing restrictions on contact. There, the language is when a court imposes a sentence on an individual or places an individual on probation, the court may prohibit the individual from contacting victims or co-actors. Again, under the state's theory, that statute would have to read when a court imposes a sentence on an individual or places an individual on probation or is considering a post-conviction motion. That language isn't there, and those two items are routinely addressed in post-conviction motions and on appeal. I'd like to return briefly to whether or not this was, in fact, unknowingly overlooked. I think it's important to note that in State v. Ralph, the court there said that an accomplice's prior jail term was overlooked because no party mentioned the factor at the sentencing hearing. All parties overlooked the factor. So there, simply silence on the record was enough to show that it was overlooked. And that's the case here. The judge said no one brought it up. In State v. Boyden, the issue was Boyden's assistance to law enforcement. And there, it wasn't on the record. But when Boyden went back with his new factor motion, the circuit court said, well, everyone knew he was helping. And so I think also in response to the question Justice Kelly had, the circuit court could have said, I did consider this. I knew what her age and other facts about her were, and I knew about the expungement statute, and I considered it, but I rejected it. But the circuit court didn't say that here. Instead, it said, if somebody would have asked me about it, I would have said, well, no, she's not getting expungement. Granted, no one brought it up. I didn't bring it up. So it wasn't considered, and Ms. Arbery should have one opportunity to have the court consider her for this important opportunity. If there are no further questions.
Well, do we have to overrule Matasik?
No, I don't think you do, because the Matasik was about, as a matter of course, whether this decision can be deferred until the end of sentence. And Ms. Arbery is not asking for the court to wait until she's done with her sentence. She's simply asking to have it reviewed when it was overlooked.
Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Christine Remington, and I represent the state of Wisconsin in this case. The state asks this court to hold that a defendant cannot seek eligibility for expungement through a new factor sentence modification motion. The state believes that this is the wrong vehicle to challenge the expungement decision, and that allowing it would create an incentive for defendants to avoid talking about expungement at sentencing, only to bring it up later. As this court said in Matasik, and as the statute 973.015 says, a circuit court may order at the time of sentencing that the record be expunged upon successful completion of the sentence if the court determines the person will benefit and society will not be harmed. So therefore, if the circuit court considers it, that consideration must happen at sentencing.
Counsel, what happens when a defendant successfully challenges their sentence? What is the procedural next step?
successfully challenges their sentence in a post-conviction motion?
Yes. So let's say, not this case, but let's say there's a new fact, or no, let's write that. Let's just say that there was an improper sentence, right, for whatever reason. And that's brought up on a post-conviction motion, and the court finds the defendant to be successful and says, that's correct, that's an improper sentence. What happens next?
I believe under those facts that the person would go to a resentencing where the court would exercise its discretion and impose a correct sentence.
And in that circumstance, would that be at the time of sentencing within the meaning of the expunction statute?
At a resentencing, I believe that the court could then consider expungement. I think that resentencing would be considered the same as the first sentencing.
Okay.
The court would be asked to exercise its discretion.
If a defendant is successful in challenging their sentence because of a new fact, do they go to resentencing?
Under a new, yes.
If Ms. Arbery is successful in persuading us that this was a new fact, then she could have expunction considered in a resentencing.
I believe so, yes. My understanding is that Ms. Arbery violated her conditions of her extended supervision, so I believe that under her personal facts that she wouldn't be eligible.
She probably isn't going to win. But she could request it, and there would be no procedural bar.
Agreed. Exactly.
As I understand it, just for clarification, counsel, I interpreted your letter to say vis-a-vis one count, she was revoked, but not the others. So is that correct?
I believe that's correct. It was my opposing counsel's letter that that said that she was on her extended supervision for the one count and had not begun serving the probation term for the second count.
So even if we thought that the effect of an opinion in this case with regard to the count for which she was revoked might be advisory vis-a-vis the revoked count, the other count is still live with the issues presented here. Am I correct in saying that?
I believe so, because the second count of the sentence hasn't begun.
Thank you.
There are a couple reasons why the state believes a new factor motion is not the correct vehicle for challenging these, and the state's position is that an ineffective assistance of counsel post-conviction motion would be a much better fit. First, it would create an incentive for defense attorneys to purposefully not talk about expungement, and if they believed that their client was somebody who would do very well serving a probationary sentence, and in a couple years would be able to come back to the court and point to good deeds that he or she had done, and that incentive would undermine the legislature's intent to have this decision made at sentencing. It's important to remember that there's also no requirement that circuit courts talk about expungement at sentencing, and that's another reason why the unknowingly overlooked part of the new factor motion is not the appropriate remedy for this case. The state believes that that ineffective assistance claim is a much better claim because the person could claim that their attorney was deficient for failing to discuss it and then go on to talk about prejudice. In this case, we don't know if the parties overlooked this at sentencing. The circuit court certainly said in its post-conviction decision that it hadn't considered it but would have denied it. But there's nothing in the record to know whether the defense attorney thought about it and decided this is not the right candidate for this, she has a prior record, or whatever reason, might have considered it and purposefully not brought it up at sentencing. And that's another reason why the unknowingly overlooked part of the new factor test doesn't work, and that it's much better filling it in under the ineffective assistance claim.
Let me ask in the vernacular, Well, what would defense counsel and his client have to lose? I mean, even if they think they may lose on the motion or the request, I mean, why not try it?
Why not try?
Why not try for expungement? I understood your comment to be that maybe defense counsel made a strategic decision not to pursue this because she may not prevail on it. Well, the best way, most sure way not to prevail is not even to ask. You know?
True, but I think that I could see a situation where a defendant at the time of sentencing maybe doesn't look like a good candidate for expungement because of whatever reasons, but the attorney knows the person is committed to making themselves better and improving the choices that they make. And in that case, would think in a few months, maybe it'd be better, maybe if they brought it up in a new factor motion, that would have a better chance of success because the defendant at the time of sentencing doesn't look like a good candidate for expungement, but the attorney believes that over time the defendant would be a better candidate, and that would be a reason why they might not want to bring it up. And I think that would undermine the legislature's intent of adding the language to the statute that says it must be considered at sentencing. I think it's important to note that under the jury instructions, the circuit courts are advised that they may consider expungement at sentencing when the person meets the statutory requirements, but shall consider it when the defendant asks for it. And it's the state's position that if a defendant wants to be considered for expungement, the defendant has that obligation to bring it up at sentencing and to ask for it then. The state's position is that this court should not accept Arbery's invitation to use its superintending authority to require circuit courts to discuss expungement at every sentencing hearing. As this court's aware, not every person meets the statutory requirements for expungement, and this would create a burden on the circuit courts to remember to talk about this in situations where the statutory criteria are met. The legislature specifically, this is different than the Challenge Incarceration Program and the Earned Release Program, where in both of those statutes, the legislature wrote that the circuit court shall consider those things at sentencing. But in the expungement statute, the legislature wrote may consider. And I think that if this court used its superintending authority to require circuit courts to do it, it would be undermining that legislative intent to treat those things differently. The state's position is that if this court gets to the circuit court's exercise of discretion at the post-conviction hearing, that the circuit court properly exercised its discretion, saying that Ms. Arbery should not have her record expunged. There's a recent decision from the Court of Appeals, Helmbrecht, where the circuit court said that it was denying expungement because it cannot make the finding that society would not be harmed, and the Court of Appeals affirmed that as a proper exercise of discretion. I believe that's very similar to what the circuit court did here, where the circuit court said that the society had the right to know about a defendant's convictions and who's committing crimes. And so it's the state's position that if this court finds that a new factor motion was the proper vehicle to challenge this, that the circuit court properly exercised its discretion in denying eligibility for Ms. Arbery.
And if we reach that question, can we look back to what the circuit court said at the time of sentencing?
I believe, though, that what the circuit court said at the time of sentencing is relevant. I believe the circuit court at sentencing made it pretty clear that Arbery was not a good candidate for expungement by its comments when it said that, you know, I mean, she had a prior record of doing the same sort of crimes and she had not learned her lesson, continued. And the court also mentioned that Ms. Arbery was on probation at the time she committed this current offenses, and that was another reason why the court was exercising its sentence discretion, but I think that consideration would also be relevant
to the question of whether she would be eligible for expungement.
Does it make any difference, to follow up Justice Kelly's question, that those comments by the judge were made at sentencing versus at the end of some motion hearing that had been brought pre-trial? In other words, at any hearing, can you scour the record as an appellate court to find something that the judge said at some hearing somewhere to sustain its exercise of discretion in denying the new factor motion? Or is it essential that those extraneous comments be made at sentencing?
Well, I believe that the circuit court at the post-conviction hearing properly exercised its discretion, first of all. But I think because of that, I think the sentencing comments shed more light on why the circuit court made the decision it did post-conviction. That the circuit court's post-conviction decision saying that society had a right to know that Ms. Arbery that committed this crime, I believe the comments at sentencing were more, shed some light on why the court would have denied expungement had anyone asked for it at sentencing.
And the rest of the answer then is what? If the court had made similar comments at the close of a motion hearing, a motion to suppress evidence, can we look at those comments?
I guess I wouldn't. If they were relevant to the exercise of sentence discretion, I could see that it possibly would be, but I think most likely comments like that would not be something that the court should be considering. I think that here, at the post-conviction hearing, the circuit court properly exercised its discretion by denying Ms. Arbery's request, and that's the most important thing here. I don't think the court should be scouring the record of suppression hearings. Well, it's the state's position that this court should hold that a defendant cannot seek eligibility for expungement through the new factor sentence modification motion, and that a post-conviction motion for ineffective assistance would be the proper remedy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to make 3 points on rebuttal. First, regarding the state's discussion of gamesmanship. Second, about whether this can be overlooked if it wasn't required. And third, about the exercise of discretion. First, the state posits that defendants could play games if new factors were allowed. But that would be a foolish gamble for defendants to take, because if they ask for the court to consider expungement at the time of sentencing, the court has to do that. If they wait and delay until they can do it in a new factor motion, it's possible that the court will simply deny the motion, one, because they would say they considered it even though they didn't say so on the record, or two, they could say that it wasn't highly relevant to the sentence, and that would be the end of any consideration for that defendant. It also supposes quite a bit of knowledge from youthful offenders who would need to be aware of the Matasik decision, aware of the deadlines for an appeal, and have that somehow match up with the length of their sentence. It's also worth noting that the Public Defender's Office does not appoint attorneys for sentence modification motions once the person is beyond their direct appeal. So in the example the state gave, if they did have a 2-year probationary term, they couldn't come to us after 2 years and say, now I'd like to try to go back and get my direct appeal deadlines reinstated to modify my sentence. We wouldn't appoint for that. The state also mentioned that this isn't overlooked because it wasn't required to be discussed. It's true that it wasn't required to be discussed, and it wouldn't be unless this court uses its supervisory authority to make that a requirement. But that doesn't mean something can't be overlooked. Things that are overlooked are not always things that a court must discuss on the record. For instance, we can go back again to the accomplice's prior record in Ralph. There's no requirement that a court go over that, and that can still be overlooked. And lastly, I'd like to point out a distinction between Helmbrecht and this case. In State v. Helmbrecht, the recent Court of Appeals decision that discussed an exercise of discretion regarding expungement, the court there said that the Galleon analysis does apply to the factors that the court has to consider. So the court can't use magic words, and it has to talk about the facts to apply them to the two standards, whether the defendant will benefit and whether society will not be harmed. And in Helmbrecht, the court said much more than the court said here. And if this court looks at paragraph 14 of Helmbrecht, the court there noted that Helmbrecht had multiple types of drugs in her possession at the time of her arrest, marijuana, prescription medication for which she did not have a prescription. It goes on. It talks about the way that Helmbrecht talked to the officers, and it talked about her job as a medical professional. So certainly the court there applied the facts of the case to the expungement standard, and that provides a nice contrast with what happened here, where there were no facts of Ms. Arbery's case, and the court's reasoning could be used to deny expungement to any defendant. That's not a proper exercise of discretion. We're asking this court to conclude that this is a new factor and remand to the circuit court so that it can properly exercise its discretion. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you both very much for good arguments and for fine briefs. We are going to adjourn and we'll reconvene in closed conference at 20 minutes before 3. We are adjourned.